Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
Happy Wednesday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the three-hour satellite soiree. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Indianapolis to Islip, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. Hey, you're on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. One of my favorite moments of every morning is when I add in the unique cities in that intro. And at some point, Mraz, his ears perk up, his eyes get wide, his head whips back as though I just named a place on a different planet. What? That's not a town, is it? Wait, that's a city. Is that a place? We have such a good show. We have such a good show. I'm so excited to help promote this show and to get you guys involved and to let you know what we got coming up here. First up this hour, Gary Danielson is going to join us. Lead analyst SEC on CBS. He'll have the call of the SEC championship game on Saturday as Auburn takes on Georgia in Atlanta. Gary Danielson in 20 minutes from now, really even less, 15 minutes from now, will come up at 20 past the hour. We'll talk to him about what happened in the Iron Bowl, about the football playoff situation, about Tennessee's coaching search, about everything. So stay right here, Gary Danielson. I love talking to him. Coming up here 20 minutes past the hour. Next hour, in studio, Moose Johnson. We're going to have Moose Johnson join us here in studio to talk NFL. A ton of stuff to get to with him. Obviously, the Eli stuff is front and center. So we'll talk to Moose coming up in studio next hour here on the show. And then in the final hour, as you guys know, yesterday I was promoting Roy Jones Jr. joining us in studio. He wasn't able to make it yesterday during the show, so we've got him today during the show. We were able to record with him right after the show yesterday, so I guarantee you this time around, we've got it. We've got him. So today, Gary Danielson, Moose Johnston, and Roy Jones Jr., two of those in studio. How good is that? So we are locked. We are loaded. Hopefully you're excited. We are. Hit me up at 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, on Twitter, DA on CBS. Where else could we begin but Eli Manning? And the decision by the Giants yesterday to go with Geno Smith, to sit Eli, and to basically move in a different direction. Now, number one, sitting Eli Manning at this point in time actually isn't the craziest thing in the world. The Giants season is over. They're going to have a top five pick more than likely. They've got an aging quarterback. There are quarterbacks in this draft. Sitting Eli to analyze, to scout, to view what you have at quarterback is not the craziest thing in the world. the craziest thing in the world yesterday is how they handled this decision. It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
I just didn't think that's how do you prepare? Hey, start this week. I was going to play the first half, and Gino was going to start the second half. But where, you know, eventually they're going to start working in Davis, and I thought I was just starting and playing to keep a streak alive, and I didn't think that's the right thing.
It's hard. It's been a hard day in the hand of this, but hang in there and figure it out.
Hardest things with the Giants?
It's up there. Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like you might have started your last game for the Giants?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll take it one week at a time.
I don't believe it.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
So, let's start with the obvious. Sitting Eli Manning is a drastic and dramatic decision for this franchise since he's not injured, since the entire team stinks, since the team's going nowhere. It's not like you could say, okay, we need to win games. We need a jolt. It's not like you can say, well, Eli, you're the problem on offense. The O-line stinks. The wide receivers are injured. The play calling's no good. So when you make this decision, you've got to treat this with kid gloves. And what you have to do is honor Eli in the moment. You do not make him answer questions at his locker. You don't make it cold and callous. You don't basically demote him to embarrass him and then make him explain it. Okay, that's the wrong way to do so. If you're going to do this and look at a younger quarterback and assess what you have a day with Eli Manning at a podium. Let's say it's yesterday. And there's John Mara, and there's Jerry Reese, and there's Ben McAdoo, and there's Eli Manning. And essentially the entire thing is an honoring of what Eli has meant to the team, and that this is not a demotion. This is the unfortunate reality. And so everybody has to be front and center. The owner, the GM, the coach have to say, this is why we made this decision. We didn't want to make this decision, but we truly appreciate what Eli's brought to the table, because Eli doesn't necessarily deserve more respect than another quarterback or somebody else in terms of not being able to relinquish his job. That's one thing. But how you do it, Eli has never criticized management. He's never criticized the head coach. He's never criticized his teammates. He's won two Super Bowls. He's been the ultimate professional. You don't simply throw him out there like he is Eli Apple, like he is Janoris Jenkins, like he's a guy that basically quit on the team and now you go explain it. So they botched this because they didn't stand front and center to explain this with Eli in a place where it feels like you are respecting him. Number two, what is going on within that organization that A, John Mara thinks this is the right way to handle this? B, that they're asking Eli Manning to answer questions at his locker about this? And C, that the rest of the locker room isn't a morgue? I mean, you've got JPP and others whooping it up 10 feet away from Eli as his eyes are welling up, as the guy can't believe this is where his career has come from. Can you imagine if the New York Yankees eventually decided, Derek Jeter, you know what? You're being benched today. You're no longer starting, or you're moved to DH. What that clubhouse would be like? How the Yankees would have done that? Well, Eli Manning, while not winning as many championships as Derek Jeter and not being a slam dunk Hall of Famer like Derek Jeter, represents a lot of the things that Derek Jeter did to the New York Yankees for the New York Giants. You don't simply throw him out at the locker, make him explain what happened, and then have the rest of these numbskulls joking around him. What is going on inside that organization? I think John Mara has lost it. Jerry Reese has run and hid from his responsibilities. Ben McAdoo is a fire. He is a dumpster fire with dirty diapers inside the dumpster and tires surrounding it. It's just a disgusting way to handle all this. And let me go back to my original point. Sitting Eli Manning actually isn't the worst decision in the world. 2 or 3 weeks ago, Mraz and I were talking about this off the air, that with Davis Webb in the pipeline and a top five pick, you've got to figure out what you have in Davis Webb in some way, shape, or form. He was a third-round pick last year. If Davis Webb comes in and you go, ooh, you know what? We got something here. Then you can trade out of that top five pick and collect a ton of picks. If he stinks, you go, eh, you know what? We got to take Rosen or Darnold or whoever it is at the top five spot. Or Davis Webb looks good, you can try to trade him to get a pick back or two for a young quarterback that maybe somebody else wants. But the way that you do this is not going to Geno Smith. There is no reason to go to Geno Smith. You know what Geno Smith is. Geno Smith is not your franchise quarterback to take over for Eli Manning. There's no way, shape, or form Geno Smith has any future in the organization. This is what you do. You take the final month of the season and you say, this is Davis Webb's month. We will not go to any other quarterback until it's Davis Webb. When we go to Davis Webb, we will have a day where everybody acts like this is basically a death in the family to honor Eli Manning. And then when you turn the page on Davis Webb, if he's not the guy next year, Eli Manning might come back, and then he hands the baton over at some point in time to the rookie quarterback, the same way Kurt Warner did it to him in 2004. What you don't do is basically embarrass the guy and make him answer questions as the rest of the team whoops it up in the locker room. It's amazing because the New York Giants actually can rationalize this as a football decision, except for the way that it went down and going to Geno. That makes no sense. And the way that it went down is so ham-fisted, is so ridiculous, is so clumsy, it makes you wonder who is making decisions there and if the Maras and the Tishes are completely out to lunch right now. 855-212-4CBS. 855-212-4227. I'm sure you guys have thoughts on the Giants' handling of Eli, the organization, going to Geno, what to do next. So I want to hear from you guys again at 855-212-4227 or on Twitter, DA on CBS. When we come back, Gary Danielson, the SEC on CBS, lead analyst. He'll talk to us about the SEC championship game, what Georgia needs to do to pull the upset, Tennessee's coaching search, and if Alabama still has life in the playoff. That's all coming up next with Gary Danielson, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
All right, DA.
Hey, DA.
Jamming hard on it, DA.
I don't know if you'll go bonkers or crazy, DA.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back to the DA Show, everybody. CBS Sports Radio, Damon Amendolara with you. And we prepare for Championship Saturday as the SEC on CBS culminates in the SEC championship game. Auburn and Georgia for a spot in the playoff. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. Eastern time with college football, the drive to Atlanta. And on the call, of course, is our friend Gary Danielson. Gary, good morning.
Damon, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for joining us. Let's start with the easy question. Do you believe this is a de facto playoff game? In other words, Auburn or Georgia in with a win?
Of course. I think there's four games, two conferences, both the ACC winner and the SEC winner are in. They will represent their conference and get into the playoffs. And I also believe, even though the committee doesn't believe that Wisconsin is one of the four best teams, they've showed that all year. They do have an easier path than other teams to get into the opportunity to play in the playoff. They're going to reward them for not only winning the Big Ten, but being undefeated. And obviously Oklahoma with their quality win and being able to win the Big 12 and the way they've played this year, if they win, they're in. So if the chalk holds, obviously the two conferences will be in. and then Oklahoma and Wisconsin will be in. That's one of only four possible scenarios. The other three scenarios, you can figure out as well as I, just Ohio State wins, or just TCU wins, or both Ohio State and TCU wins. That's the only four possibilities left.
You were on the plains two of the final 3 weeks. You saw Auburn dismantle Georgia and then went impressively against Alabama. Let me ask you, coming out of that Georgia game, what did Auburn do last Saturday that proved even more? What more did you learn from Auburn that you could take away after the win over Alabama?
It's a good question. I guess that Jarrett Stidham continued to show that he can play in big games and carry the football team would be number one. This is a very experienced, solid football team across all parts of the team. Their coordinators, Gus Malzahn, basically, who's the coordinator, and Kevin Steele are experienced in SEC football. Secondary has three seniors back, or a junior and two seniors back, experienced a lot of football. They have NFL eliteness at the defensive line. Their offensive line has four seniors. They've got the MVP at tailback and carry on, and then their emerging quarterback. So they've proven to me one thing. They're solid. Well, I guess it's two. They're solid, number one, and they're elite at home. What they've yet to prove is, are they elite either on the road or in a neutral site? I guess that's their next step, because if they win, they're going to be in the playoffs for sure. But I really believe that Auburn would have beat anyone two out of the last 3 weeks at home.
Yeah, fair. That is such a crazy atmosphere inside Jordan-Hare. And now Georgia, thankfully for the Bulldogs, get them in a neutral site, as you mentioned. Gary Danielson joining us here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio. Is this just, frankly, a bad matchup for Georgia because of those strengths that you mentioned for Auburn? Or do the Bulldogs stand a chance now that they are not playing this game at Jordan-Hare?
Well, I don't think it's a bad matchup. I think when you raise your level of competition, no matter who you're playing against, matchups appear. I mean, you know, come on, let's face it. The SEC East is a mess. I mean, everybody talks about, you know, Wisconsin having an easy path. Well, so did Georgia. You know, I mean, it's hard to argue. You know, well, one has to wonder if Georgia was in the West. Obviously, if they would have lost the one game like Alabama, they wouldn't be playing for this opportunity. So I don't think Georgia's a finished product, but I think they're capable of beating Auburn. And I think the fact that they're going to play him for a second time is important. And I think the fact that their freshman quarterback, Jake Fromm, gained so much experience from playing against Auburn already, there were big plays available in that game. I assume they will be again. If he has a half a second more to hit him, it could be a different game.
One of the things that was most striking about Alabama's loss was that they didn't play a crisp game. They're almost never that sloppy. What do you think that could be attributed to?
Yeah, I think it's a good point. It's a point I tried to make during the broadcast. I think they gave a little bit too much credit to Auburn's defensive line and tweaked their offense too much. They relied on their quarterback too much to run the ball. I think they perhaps, I don't know, I'm making this up, might have told Jalen that the matchup in pass protection was a nervous one for them. So they told Jalen, if your first guy isn't there, let's make your second read a run because we want to avoid the sacks against this Auburn defensive line. It seemed like Alabama changed a bit too much. There were some, you know, weird things that happened in the game. I mean, I've never seen an Alabama quarterback in the 12 years I've been doing throw that when Jalen was running to the right, throw across his body and lob the ball up to the middle of the end zone when they were already in scoring zone. I mean, that was a shocking throw to me. And it's always been the trademark of Alabama when the game got tight that they had so much experience in these big games that they were the team never to crack. They were the clutch team. All that being said, prior to the two-snap fiasco, they had the ball driving in plus territory down in a one-possession game. So I don't want to, you know, just throw Alabama away here. I think Alabama, top to bottom, had the best season in all of college football. They showed up the most times. They played the most consistent football. and the mantra that every game should count, I still think they're not getting enough credit for that initial Florida State game when Florida State really was Florida State. And but now they're in a tough spot because they're going to be the second team from the SEC, and I think that's going to be distasteful for this committee to do.
That's a great point. Gary Danielson joins us, lead college football analyst. He's on the SEC championship game. Before I let you go, I want to ask you, since you mentioned the SEC East, Tennessee has been going through all these iterations of what coach they might try to hire, Greg Schiano. From where you stand, what's your read on Tennessee's coaching search at this point and what happened with Schiano the other day?
I thought Greg would have been a great choice for Tennessee. I have to be honest, okay? I've known Greg. I know he has some, all coaches have some weaknesses. You know, he gets a little chippy sometimes. He's a bit, you know, when he's running his program, he doesn't like a lot of other people telling him what to do. He doesn't enjoy press conferences. But I can think of a couple other coaches that have that type of personality, namely Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. You know, when it's working good, it's embraced. When it's not working good, it's a quirkiness that bothers people. I thought Tennessee has gotten soft. I thought Tennessee has gotten undisciplined in the last few years, and I thought Greg would have been the perfect choice for it. Unfortunately, the athletic director or chancellor or whoever's making the decisions were not strong enough to stand up to the public outcry when I think they should have. If I would have been John Curry, I would have either said, we hire Greg Schiano or I'm handing in my resignation, because you know what? It's going to cost him his job anyway, the way he's doing it.
Gary Danielson, lead college football analyst for the SEC on CBS. He's on the call, of course, with Brad Nessler Saturday when Auburn takes on Georgia. The SEC championship game is likely a play-in game for the college football playoff. Coverage begins 3 p.m. Eastern time. College football, the drive to Atlanta. Gary, it's been a pleasure all season long. If I don't talk to you again by the end of the season, thank you for finding time for us this football season. I appreciate it.
All right, you always do a great job. Thanks for picking my brain. Appreciate it.
Gary Danielson joining us here on the show. When we return, we've got your sound check, your best audio of the day, including Mike Francesa going all in on the benching of Eli Manning. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Muffins, mornings, mothership.
I'm sick of the Dallas Cowboys. If they see you at McDonald's, they shouldn't even want to serve you. Say, you're the one gave them some six packs. We ain't got no more food.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Puffiness with sodium.
It's time to ask the pros, where you, the listener, gets to ask a question brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simply check out the link, cbssportsradio.com/askthepros, or tweet your question at CBS Sports Radio. Use the hashtag AskThePros. Trust the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to help you choose the brakes that are an exact fit for your vehicle. Brands that you trust, like BrakeBest and Wagner Thermoquiet. O'Reilly Auto Parts is the brake parts you need at guaranteed low prices. O'Reilly, better parts, better prices every day. We've got Moose Johnston joining us. Darryl Moose Johnston from the NFL on Fox. He'll be in studio with us 1 hour from now. So stay tuned for that and watch when he's in studio. That should be a lot of fun at watchda.com. That's the site of the simulcast, watchda.com. A lot of emotional responses about what the Giants did to Eli Manning yesterday. Daniel tweets, I've been a Giants fan since I was 13. After watching this clown show for the last year, I'm jumping off the Giants boat. After the drama with McAdoo and now disrespect to Eli, I'm done. I'll only go to the only other team I give a damn about in the NFL, hashtag who dat. Let me tell you, the Giants couldn't have botched this worse, because from a football standpoint, there is an absolute rational way to decide to bench Eli. You can say, we've got to figure out what we have in Davis Webb, because we're going to have a top five pick in a quarterback heavy draft. We just spent a third rounder on Davis Webb. We want to get some type of thumbnail on him going into the offseason. And all of that would make complete sense. Eli Manning in the middle of a mess of a season doesn't necessarily need that starts streak anymore. It's not an important streak. His legacy with the Giants is already solidified. But how they handled this is so socially clumsy. It makes Eli seem like such a victim that it's almost as though a PR company from Madison Avenue was hired to come in to help the Giants, and the Giants said, we'll do the exact opposite. We'll Costanza this. Whatever you say, we will do the exact opposite. One day, Eli Manning is going to be in the Ring of Honor for the New York Giants. Every 5 or 10 years, he's going to come back through those doors as the most popular player of the two Super Bowl championships, and the Giants honor their Super Bowl teams all of the time. So he's always going to be around. He's always going to be beloved. He's always going to be the most popular player on the most recent two championship teams. I mean, do you think the Steelers would give Taj Boyd the job and make Ben Roethlisberger answer questions at his locker? It just makes no sense to give it to Geno Smith right now and to basically make Eli the martyr. It is so easy to have a day for Eli at a podium and have everybody come in and you have two Super Bowl trophies, two Lombardi trophies on that countertop, on that table, on that podium. And the first thing you have is John Mara and Jerry Reese have written statements about those moments, about Eli in those games, about how those two championships are because of Eli. It's the easiest thing in the world to just honor him that way and then say, almost tearfully, unfortunately, the season didn't go the way that we wanted. We have to go in a different direction in terms of trying to assess our next season. This is about the organization, and Eli has been a wonderful teammate, an employee, and player. And unfortunately, he understands the reality of this situation and has told us he will be supportive in every way, shape, and form. And so we move forward with a plan to see what the future is for the New York Giants, and we hope Eli is part of that. But right now, we have to make a tough decision, and that means Davis Webb starts for the final 5-6 games of the season, and we'll see where we are after that, and we want Eli to be part of what we have moving forward. You get an applause. Maybe you fly in some of the Super Bowl champions with him. Did you see the outcry on Twitter yesterday? I mean, Brandon Jacobs, Lawrence Tynes, every wide receiver, Antrell Roll, every Carl Banks, even guys that didn't play with him, cursing the Giants organization, using actual vulgarity about how awful this decision is. You fly in some of those guys, you have them set up behind the podium or around to applaud Eli. And, you know, people in football, players understand your time has to come at some point, but you're not supposed to be discarded like an old bottle. And that's what they made Eli look like. And you can make every argument in the world that Eli should sit right now so they can see Davis Webb, but you just can't completely toss him out like trash when the GM's been trash, the head coach has been bigger trash than anything, the offensive line is trash, the wide receivers are trash, the defense has been trash. You can't trash Eli publicly when everything else has been a dumpster fire as well. Let's get to your best audio of the day.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We start with LeBron James in a win over the Miami Heat. It's the first time in his career he's been ejected.
I got fouled and showed my frustration to the ref, and he sent me to the locker room. I'm trying to win every possession. I don't care if we have 23, we're down 23. I want to win every possession, and I wanted to win that possession. You know, we got a great defensive stop. get an opportunity to try to, you know, get some more momentum, and you know, and it was you know, it wasn't a momentum play on the other end.
I mean, usually living legends get more respect than that, and that's kind of why that LeBron has not been ejected over the course of his career, is because officials have a lot of respect for him. Is it a big deal? Not really, that he got tossed. I think the bigger deal is that the Cavaliers are on an 8-game win streak. They seem to have fixed some of their early season problems. Right now, they're playing great defense. They've held three straight opponents under 100 points, which is critical for if the Cavs want to get to where they need to get to, which is back to the NBA Finals. And how about Kevin Love in the win? Kevin Love finished with 38 points. But the guy was absolute nails all game long. And that's the one thing that's unfortunate here, is that even when Kevin Love goes off for 38, he's overshadowed by LeBron. He was tremendous. And it reminds you that, yes, when Kevin Love was the lone wolf, pardon the pun, in Minnesota, he was an elite scorer and rebounder and could go off any night. He got to Cleveland, didn't need to be that. And I wonder, now that Kyrie's out, obviously gone to the Celtics, and Isaiah Thomas is still out and won't be back until the new year, can they start looking at Kevin Love and go, hey, buddy, we can use you because you can score in bunches. I know you haven't done it in a long time. You haven't had to carry us. But maybe now, lean on him. And how cool would it be in terms of redemption, considering Kevin Love was always the whipping boy of everybody, just the same way that Chris Bosh was in Miami. If he actually now is relied upon to have big games and delivered, that'd be a pretty cool circular thing for Kevin Love's reputation with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Speaking of Eli getting benched, Mike Francesa, WFAN, going off on the Giants.
McAdoo's career is worthless. Jerry Reese's career is built on Eli Manning. His success in those two games is the only reason that Jerry Reese got a career. He doesn't have a career because of what he's drafted here. He's got a career because he won two Super Bowls, won by Eli Manning. Well, those, none of those guys walk around that room with the swagger that they have. It's built on his back. When you're putting out there no starting wide receivers and an offensive line that last week was embarrassing, you got to be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough. The worst thing that ever happened is Eli Manning had to be associated with you as head coach with the career he's had here. Maybe on your way out, you can take a look at Eli's rings. That's the closest you're ever going to get to one, too.
You know, I admire Mike because this is a guy that is 2 weeks away from retirement, or at least walking away from doing a show every day. He does it for 5.5 hours on New York radio and has done it for nearly 30 years. And he's still got a fire. I mean, I never get that fired up. He's doing it 2 weeks to go until he leaves the job. I mean, the only time I get that fired up is about when people wear sweatpants at work. The only time that I get that fired up. He's like really, really angry. You got to give him credit. I don't know how you muster that type of anger, especially at that point in your career. You're 2 weeks away from pseudo-retirement, chilling out. It's the holidays. Jeez, he still brings the bazooka. And finally, Dana White on the future of Conor McGregor fighting again in the octagon.
We were working on a fight for him at the end of the year, and he's just not ready. Listen, we're still in that. Conor might never fight again. Guy's got $100 million. You know, I got guys that made less than that and were lawyers and went to school their whole life and quit working, right? When you go to school your whole life to be a lawyer and you're a good lawyer, you make a few bucks and you're done. Guy sitting home every day watching cartoons or whatever he's doing. I don't know. You know, Joe Silva doesn't work anymore. You know, these guys make money and that's it.
I wonder what kind of cartoons retired lawyers watch. Is it like Adult Swim cartoons or like Cartoon Network cartoons? So this is kind of interesting because I think that there's a bit of a mental battle here being waged by Dana White. UFC needs Conor McGregor. UFC desperately needs Conor McGregor. He is the singular force to market within the UFC. It would be like LeBron James 5 years ago walking away from the NBA, but if there was no other superstars in the NBA. I realize there's other stars, but nobody with crossover appeal like Conor McGregor. He is the biggest. So I think Dana White is going to try to appeal to the competitive side of Conor McGregor. McGregor comes from a hard scrabble, blue collar, working class life growing up. I don't think he wants to be seen as the guy that got money and then right away walked away. You know what? Once you got paid, you couldn't do it anymore, Conor? That wouldn't necessarily appeal to his incredibly loyal constituency and fan base. So I think that there's a challenge here by Dana White. Hey, did you get soft? But there's another reality, and you didn't hear it in that soundbite. Dana White went on to say, you know, it's hard getting punched in the face for a living. Guys don't want to do that once they get paid. And I totally understand that. My question is, how about football players? You know, the idea here is that Conor McGregor has already made so much money, you can just retire and walk away. And that's true. I mean, $100 million. I mean, if I gave you $10 million in the bank, wouldn't you just retire right now? If I gave you $5 million in the bank, you'd probably retire. If I gave you $1 million in the bank, you might carry the one and at least walk away for a couple of years. So if you had $100 million in the bank, you'd go, yeah, I'm good. I didn't need to be punched in the face anymore. But players are competing. It's not like Tom Brady doesn't have $100 million in the bank. So there is a competitive spirit here that no matter how much money you have, some players simply need to be out there competing. And especially in football, maybe in baseball and basketball, not as physical. But in football, you're putting your brain and your life on the line, or at least your body on the line. What cost is it that would make that not worth it for you anymore? And now money is so big and you still have players playing. Now you have guys retiring early, obviously. But like for Tom Brady or Drew Brees or Peyton Manning, guys like Dwight Freeney playing into their 40s, what is the cost? And I guess that no matter how much money there is always going to be guys that still want to be out there competing. Because I thought about this going, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, why would you want to get your face beaten in if you've got all that money? But football players do it all the time. Not all of them. But a lot of them play and hold on for as long as humanly possible. Now, I realize it's not getting punched in the face, but it's not far from that. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Hit me up on everything from the Vols coaching search to the college football playoff rankings to the Eli Manning mess. Next hour, we've got Moose Johnston, who's going to join us in studio. We've got Roy Jones Jr., who's going to join us in studio. So a lot of action here on the DA. A lot.
Aw, the DA. I love the DA.
I will say this. I am pretty surprised at how many people were emotionally moved, both in positive form and negative form, by the sweatpants segment yesterday. I didn't see that coming. I saw the Houston Texans coaching staff on Monday night looking like a bunch of slobs at work in a professional capacity on the sideline in sweatpants, and I laid into them. Mraz, of course, defended them because, as Mraz argued, he'd be more productive if we would just allow him to wear sweatpants and Zubaz to work. I, of course, find that incredibly offensive. And so we went back and forth. Now, Mraz, I don't know about you, but on Twitter, social media, from friends, from family, I don't know if we've had another segment that has elicited that many opinions from people both listening to the show as listeners and people that just flat know us.
It's truly amazing how that was a lightning rod, and I think we should state this because I can't believe I had to field this many questions. Me and you were okay. We're not talking. We've moved past this. We're going to be fine. I think a lot of people thought, like, hey, was that going to be your last day with DA because he really lit into you, saw what he truly thinks of you?
Yeah.
Like, we did have fun with that. We're okay.
I think anybody that asked that question hasn't listened to a lot of the show over the last 5 years.
I mean, I would think.
That didn't feel that unique, did it?
No, it didn't. And the moment the segment ended, we were cracking up to each other afterwards, just laughing at how ridiculous the argument was. But people, it struck a nerve.
It did.
A lot of team DAs, team Mrazes, and they were like, line in the sand, DA show time.
Like, that is going to be the break point for a lot of people. Whether you're pro sweatpants at work or or anti sweatpants at work, you got to pick a side here. It's like politics in 2017. Pick a side right now, and you got to go down with the ship. You got to die on that hill. When we return, last night, the last college football playoff rankings before the ones that decide who's in the dance. What did we learn from last night's four in and first two out? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.